You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tomorrow is International Women's Day, and our guest is asking the U.S. government to take more action on violence against women around the world.
First, we get lots of feedback in our lives from friends, family, teachers, bosses, coworkers, complete strangers even. But what do we do with it? How do we react, take in the useful stuff, and not get defensive about the criticism?
Our next guests have some answers to those questions and some advice for us. Sheila Heen and Douglas Stone are lecturers on law at Harvard and co-founders of Triad Consulting. Their new book is called Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well. Sheila, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
And Doug, thanks a lot for joining us to you.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So why should we think about feedback as a skill?
Well, that's a great question. So I think we usually think of it as just a thing that happens. We either get feedback or we don't, or we happen to be someone who's good at taking feedback, or we're a little more thin-skinned, and it's just the way we've always been in our life. And what Sheila and I figured out is that, in fact, however good you are at receiving feedback now, the sort of the way you showed up in the world, you can get better at it with some just some very specific tools ways of thinking and ways of engaging in those conversations. So it's a skill in the sense that if you think about it, if you're reflective, if you practice a little bit, you can actually improve.
And Sheila, do we pay too much attention to how we give feedback and not enough to how we take it in?
Well, that is the usual focus of efforts in organizations in particular to try to improve conversations around performance or improve coaching that happens or improve performance appraisals, is that they put enormous time and resources into teaching managers how to give feedback more effectively. And that's helpful, but the bottom line is that if the receiver isn't able or willing to take in the feedback, there's really only so far skillfulness or even persistence are going to go. So we actually think we've had it backwards all these years, and that what we should be doing is actually all of us, and particularly people in leadership, learning how to receive more effectively and driving your own or accelerating your own learning.
Why should we be focusing so much on that instead of on the other end of the equation about the giving of the feedback? Because there are so many examples, you give lots of them in your book, about feedback which is just so completely hard to digest. Wouldn't it make it easier if people just got better at saying things nicely and well?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point, is that there is so much challenging feedback out there that's not put poorly, it's not put skillfully, or it's put poorly, or it's mean, or it's nasty, or it's vague, or the person who gives it just, isn't that competent at giving feedback. And so what happens is if that's the focus, if we're moving through our life and we're kind of waiting for that perfect coach or that perfect teacher or perfect supervisor to show up who happens to be really good at it, we might be waiting an awfully long time. And the way that we can return leverage to ourselves is to say, look, whether the people around me are skilled or not at giving feedback, I'm going to get really good at figuring out, how to hear it, what can I actually learn from this, even if it's given, as poorly as could be.
Well, Sheila, let's start developing that skill now. Wow. What is the first step to take in learning to sift through whatever feedback is coming in and getting something good out of it?
Well, the first thing to do is don't decide right away whether the feedback is right or wrong. I think when someone tells you something, whether it's a quote-unquote suggestion for your parenting or in your performance evaluation you get your rating, we think that I have to decide, okay, is this right, which means I have to continue to worry about it, or can I find something wrong with it so then I can, relax, I can set it aside and move on. The problem is that feedback is usually delivered in these incredibly vague labels, like you need to be more proactive, or you need to work on your people skills, or you need to be more attentive to the kids. And those labels are so vague that it's not clear either what you've seen me do that leads you to think something needs to change, or what it is you want me to do differently. And in addition, we can always find something wrong with the feedback that we get. And so the goal is don't yet decide. But in addition to automatically reacting to what's wrong with the feedback, who gave it, how it's given, where it's given, et cetera, make a second list, which is also, is there anything that's right about this feedback? And have a more engaged conversation with the other person to actually try to understand what they're trying to tell you.
And it sounds as though from what you're saying, you know, one of the most important things toward receiving feedback well and is to try to pin the person down or maybe think about how to make it specific.
Yeah, you really want to ask follow-up questions. That's a huge part of this. And you want those questions to be aimed in a certain way. So I think of it as being kind of two categories of questions. One is you want to know, where's this feedback coming from? What did, if it's your supervisor, what did my supervisor see? If they're talking about a meeting I was in, what did I say in that meeting that they observed that they're troubled by in some way? So I want to know what, look, sort of looking back, where the feedback comes from. And then looking forward, I want to think about, well, and where's this feedback going? In other words, what does my supervisor think I could be doing differently that would fix whatever was going on in the meeting?
Well, I will own up to doing some of what Sheila said and getting a little defensive when the feedback is coming in, looking maybe for a reason to dismiss it. In the book, you break down some triggers that kind of get our dander up and make us more likely to reject feedback, not take it for what it's worth. Sheila, can you run through briefly what those triggers are?
Yeah, absolutely. So what was interesting is that there are three reactions, sort of categories of reactions that we can have. One is the one that we've actually already been talking about, which is truth triggers. Is this right or is it wrong? And it's really hard to see whether it's right or wrong, not just because the giver's being vague, but also because we ourselves have blind spots. Or I should say you guys have blind spots. I know I don't have blind spots, of course, but everybody else in the world does. So it's actually quite challenging to see yourself accurately. The second set of triggers are what we call relationship triggers, and it's all based on who the giver is. And sometimes you would think that if the advice is either good or bad, it's either something we should follow or something we should reject, but in fact, who your giver is and your relationship and reactions to that person can mean that you reject the what because of the who. And then the third kind of trigger is what we call an identity trigger, and it has to do with your wiring. In terms of sensitivity to feedback, how far you swing, positive or negative, in the wake of feedback, and how long it takes you to recover, individuals can vary up to 3,000%. And so you have some people who are quite even keel, maybe even so even keel that feedback doesn't make much of an impression on them. It doesn't really get through. And other people who the same comment could have them reeling for, you know, a week. And when you are reeling, it can actually distort your sense of the feedback. So it grows, it sort of gets supersized. And one of our chapters really talks about how do you dismantle those distortions and understand your own patterns so that you can actually manage yourself in the wake of feedback.
Is it especially hard when you get feedback about something that you're incredibly invested in? Let's say you've spent 5 years of your life writing a novel, and you know then you give it to someone to read, and anything they say that's not glowing, you know, you'll be in full turtle mode with your head pulled back in. How do you react and receive feedback when it's something that you care deeply about?
Yeah, and in many ways, that's the time that it's most important to be engaged with it. So receiving feedback well, it's not about not being upset or not having a normal human reaction. If you've, you know, invested 5 years of your life in something and then you get negative feedback, obviously that's going to be really disappointing. But as Sheila says, even when there's bad news, we tend to supersize it so that it becomes even more catastrophic than it might really be. And is there a way to keep it in perspective and to say, okay, so this is what the feedback means. This is what it doesn't mean. It's not about the next book that I write. It's about this one. And then the final piece of that is to always ask yourself, so what's the coaching here for me? There's some bad news here. Maybe the book that I spent so long on, maybe it won't get published, or you know, my friend's not going to like it. But in addition to that bad news, what's the coaching for me that where I can just get a little bit better next time?
Well, I think, can I add something to that?
Yeah, yeah.
Doug is pointing out, actually, that when we say the word feedback, that actually can mean three different kinds of things. It includes appreciation. An appreciation says, I see you, I get you, I value you, you matter. Coaching is aimed at helping you get better at something or to improve. And evaluation assesses you. It rates or ranks you. It tells you where you stand and what to expect. Obviously, that happens in appraisals at work, but also in relationships. You want to know, like, where do I stand? Where is this going from your point of view? If you're showing your book manuscript to the first human being you have allowed to see it, you need to be really clear with them what you need. And it could be that what you need to stay motivated right now is just appreciation. So you could just say, look, can you just tell me three things that you like about it?
So it's okay to do that?
I think it's okay to do that. First of all, you're saving your friend from doing a whole bunch of work that actually is not what you're looking for. It's actually not what would be helpful to you. And you'll get to a place where then you say to them, look, I just need some coaching. Like, does this chronology work? Or do you feel like you get to know the character? Or could you predict what was going to happen? So that you're very specific. Like, now what I need is I need some advice. Or you could say, I need an evaluation. I think it's ready to send to my whatever, publisher, agent, an editor, my father. Can you just look at it and tell me whether you think it's ready? And that is actually doing your givers a favor, because you're the one who knows what you need. You just need to think about it and be clear when you ask.
We're learning how to receive feedback and solicit feedback. Sheila Heen and Doug Stone are with us. Their new book is Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well.
And you can join the conversation. What do you think is a key to giving, receiving good feedback? Can you share a piece of advice you've gotten from someone else that really helped you out, even if you didn't know it right away, or feedback maybe that stuck with you for the wrong reasons? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now with Doug Stone and Sheila Heen. They're the authors of Thanks for the Feedback. We're learning to take advice and criticism and to use it productively.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you good at taking feedback? Is there a piece of advice that made you change something about yourself? Do you have questions about how to take criticism from friends, family, bosses, and more? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Polly on the line in Milwaukee. Polly, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. You were calling for examples about feedback and what was helpful.
Yeah.
One of the very best experiences I ever had was one of my teachers who helped me understand that feedback was a gift, and that in what I was doing, it was a professional gift, and so it looked and felt a little differently than other things. But so when I got feedback from an instructor or a colleague, I can now consider it receiving a gift. And if I give somebody something and ask for some feedback and I get nothing, I now feel like I haven't gotten a gift.
Polly, thanks so much for bringing that up. Sheila, what do you think of that idea? Should we all have that mindset that feedback is a gift?
I think that that's right. And Polly's attitude, I think, is part of what helps her hear it that way. And, you know, the often it can feel less like a gift and more like a colonoscopy when you are actually getting it, if it's painful. But one of the things that might help Polly to get something valuable from those who are a little reluctant is not to ask, hey, do you have any feedback for me? Because that's a really broad question. It's not clear how you want the person, you know, how honest they should be or what would be helpful to you. And we suggest actually asking for one thing. What's one thing you see me doing or failing to do where you think I'm getting in my own way? Or what's one thing I could change that would make a difference to you? And that actually will yield you something quite specific and concrete, and it's a much easier question for them to answer.
Well, thank you so much, Polly. And let's move along to Anthony in Madison. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, this is Anthony.
Hi, what do you think about feedback?
I'm actually an opera singer, and opera singers, it's our job to seek out advice from coaches and teachers on a weekly basis. And my advice is to separate what it is you're asking people to give advice for. So for me, it's my voice. When they're critiquing my voice, they're not critiquing me as a person. They're just critiquing my art form, and they're actually asking me to get better at that. And so it really helps to separate those two.
All right, that's a great way to think about it, Anthony. And he's sort of getting at the idea that maybe the feedback someone is getting, it's not a moratorium on whether or not you're a decent human being. It's just directed at a skill. Is that a good way to think about it?
Exactly. That's that distinction between evaluation and coaching. Anthony's hearing it as coaching. This is going to help me get better. And, of course, any kind of coaching that you get that helps you get better is going to be a good thing. Whereas evaluation, you know, this is how good you are right now, or you're never going to be better. It's a rating, can be very threatening. You know, opera singers are a particularly interesting case for feedback because in our research for this book, we found out that people hear other people's voices through a particular part of the brain that analyzes the sort of the tone and the emotional content of what the person's saying. But when we ourselves are speaking, that part of our brain actually shuts down. And so we don't hear ourselves when we speak or when we sing the way that everyone else in the world hears us. And this is why for singers and performers, having that sort of external pair of ears is so incredibly important.
Or radio hosts, I imagine.
Or radio hosts, exactly.
As we near annual evaluation time at Wisconsin Public Radio. Anthony, thanks for the call. We've got Grace with us now in New Glarus. Grace, hi.
Hi, how are you folks doing today?
Good. What do you think about feedback?
Well, a couple of things. I definitely agree with Anthony on you really have to separate that the person giving you feedback is not giving you feedback on you as a human being. It is on your skill, your work product, perhaps your attitude if it's a, you know, if it's a, like dealing with customers or something. Again, I experienced very young that sort of thing because I rode horses for a long time. And when you are taking lessons and receiving input from your coach, it is designed to make you a better rider. And I became a teacher, a riding teacher, and a horse trainer. I moved into scientific field. When you submit a paper, it's the paper that's being critiqued, not you as a human. The other thing is don't ask for feedback from someone in a very emotionally charged situation. Mm. If you're angry at the person, or even if you're angry at someone else, or if you're in a really down mood for whatever reason, that's not the best time to receive a critique.
Interesting. Grace, thanks a lot for that. And Sheila, is that a good advice to try to keep those moments of feedback separated from those moments of emotion?
I do think Grace is on to something in terms of knowing when you actually have the capacity to take in feedback. And her earlier advice about trying to separate you as a person from the skill or the task that you are trying to get better at is really good advice. And the place where that's actually the hardest is inside relationships, right? With you, when your spouse has complaints about you, they're giving you feedback, although, you know, you think of it less as feedback and more as them being annoying. And it's one of the reasons for two things that it's really hard to take what we call relationship coaching, where there's something going on that the other person really wants you to change. It's hard not to feel that as an attack. And second, it's probably one of the reasons why the marriage research by John Gottman up in Seattle shows that a spouse's ability to hear coaching or complaints from their spouse and be influenced by them is one of the key predictors of a happy, successful marriage.
Interesting. Are there ever any pieces of feedback that you can just uniformly throw out if someone really does seem to be full of it and not saying anything that's constructive? Or is there really a kernel, a gift, a pearl in all feedback?
You know, interestingly, I think social media, and maybe the two of you being in the media have personal experiences of this, social media, it's created a whole milieu of a situation where you really can ask the question, you know, is this really feedback? Is there something for me to learn from this? Or is this just some game that people are playing and it's got a set of rules that really has nothing to do with me? And I think when we get those crazy comments that are just seem sort of out of bounds, or someone is venting, or they're trying to entertain their friends, or it feels like it's just their thing that they have to get off their chest, has nothing to do with this. I think in those situations, it's pretty reasonable to say, you know what, this really just isn't about me. It's the person just needs to say that about something or someone, and so they did. I think it's okay to decide that this really doesn't apply to me.
Sheila, one piece of advice to leave us with, if you would, for the next time we're in a situation where we're getting feedback and maybe starting to feel the defenses, the shields going up.
One would be just not to respond right away and to ask as many questions as you can and then let them know, you know, I need to think about this a little bit. So you can buy yourself some time. You know, I think that so often we think we have to respond in the moment and handle it perfectly in the moment, when in fact, you know, this process is a lifelong process. And also, the more you take initiative, the more control you have. The research also shows that people who seek out negative feedback, meaning they're not just fishing for compliments, they're looking for things they can improve, are not only more satisfied at work and adapt more quickly to new roles, but they also have higher performance reviews. So sometimes actually taking the bull by the horns is a way to choose your moments where you're most receptive, and then also not do anything that actually does harm when you get ambushed by it, of course.
All right, Sheila, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Doug, thanks to you as well.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Sheila Heen and Doug Stone about their new book, Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well.